The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I find it apropos that we just had a ceremony commemorating the death of all these people, beings that have been killed in battle, in wars, because wars are a result of conflict. And I feel our nation right now is in a state of turmoil. There's a lot of confusion and being overwhelmed by what's going on. Just to keep in mind that we're all part of this, and that that wars, people get killed in wars as a consequence of conflict. I'm going to talk a little bit about two words in the beginning anyway. One is called fighting, and the other is called meeting. Fighting is an attitude that's based on a lack of something, right? If we were completely happy and at ease, we probably wouldn't be fighting. Often when we fight, it's the realization of some kind of a loss or some kind of something that we're lacking within ourselves that we feel we need to have, and we know what we need to have. The loss can bring up grief and anger and the fighting spirit. This arising isn't bad. It's actually normal. It's natural. It is how we respond to our thoughts and feelings that is important to take notice of. So that these things arise is not in and of itself bad, but in our practice, our Buddhist practice, we take notice of how we can respond to the thoughts and feelings that do arise. So there's nothing wrong with us when we have the fighting spirit, or there's nothing wrong with us when we have grief, anger, and frustration. The problem with fighting is that once those ideas arise and we connect with them, we feel that we need to do something. And oftentimes that fighting can take a form of violence. And it can be violence on many levels, the physical violence, mental, spiritual. It becomes an act of harm. My mother sent me a newspaper story about Tassajara. This does pertain. About in Tassajara, they had to evacuate because of an approaching wildfire. This was in 2008. And the newspaper article was, again, that they may have needed to evacuate, and I don't know if they did or not. But the 2008 wildfire was approaching Tassajara Zen Center, which I think some of you are familiar with the story, and there was a book written about it. And the article that was written in the newspaper was written by the woman who wrote the book. So there was a wildfire approaching at Tassajara, which is in real fire-prone country in central California, and five monks decided to stay behind. In other words, the fire situation was so dangerous that the government, all the U.S. Forest Service and CDF people felt that Tassajara was not defensible. But these five monks decided that they needed to save their temple, or try. And the abbot, who was one of the five that stayed behind, was he was the abbot for the San Francisco Zen Center. His name was Steve Stuckey. And he led the turnaround. For for the people to stay and protect their temple. His words are, "We're not really fighting the fire. We're meeting the fire." Words, right? Meeting, fighting. Instead of confronting fire as an enemy, Stuckey's approach was to make friends with it, tame it as it reaches our boundaries. Meeting is a different kind of coming together, a different kind of encounter with conditions than fighting. The approach is more of an open mind. If you meet something, it's not like you have the set ideas of what to do, as if you know what is absolutely right to do. And still, there can arise within us or people very strong and intense feelings about what should be done. The Buddhist way is to have a bigger, fuller view, which does include our feelings and other people's feelings and opinions as well. The bigger view. Sometimes in difficult situations, people can get overwhelmed and react with anger and confusion and worry. Fair enough. To the extent that it controls their actions and thoughts. Is this beneficial to everybody? Is this helpful? I'm not going to answer that question. It's all up to you. Okay. And now I'm going to shift gears. What I've just been talking about is looking out externally. Now I'd like to take a look inside, inwardly. From the scripture of great wisdom, "In the mind of the bodhisattva who is truly one with wisdom great, the obstacles dissolve." Wisdom great, that seems like a kind of something that most of us probably don't have an easy definition of in terms of our own experience. I don't know, there may be somebody here, I don't know, but I'm not one of them. But I think of wisdom great as also the great mind. Dogen, in his work called Nothing is Hidden, talks about the great mind. And Dogen, who was an ancestor in our in our tradition, our spiritual tradition of Soto Zen, was a teacher in the 13th century, 1200 to 1253, and had a lot of training that he had done, a lot of Buddhist practice, and a lot of meditation. So this is his view. He says, "The great mind contrasts the four seasons against the backdrop of a single vista." So he's not looking at the four seasons as something that's broken up, but he's looking at the single vista of the great mind embracing the four seasons. Different. Okay? Bigger view. So the four seasons still exist. It's summer. We're heading into winter, we hope anyway. And then we have the spring and fall, or summer and fall again. Each of those things happen, but they are not the great mind, but the great mind is encompassed within, embraces all of that. It's bigger than that, but it's not within time. this is something to contemplate, and it's not something that we can all easily understand because it is incomprehensible. However, it points us in the direction of a bigger view. Okay? And so. And I ask myself when I'm feeling stuck or can't see my way through a situation, how can I find the great mind? Well, a couple of things here. One is starts with whether we think we can or not. The story of the Buddha, there's a story of the Buddha who was asked one question that had two different answers. This is, can I carve a Buddha or not? Yes, you can carve a Buddha. Can I carve a Buddha or not? No, you can't. See that? It's our minds that dictate or can control what we view. How can we see the bigger view? One thing is pretty straightforward. We can relax. If we see ourselves getting wound up, our body's getting really tense, our breathing shallow, it's surprising how clueless we can be of the what's going on with our bodies. And our bodies actually are very good teachers. They can tell us what is going on that needs to be addressed. If we hold tensions in our bodies, there may be a clue of something that we're hanging on to. Some part of us that is obstructing our view, our bigger view. And in Buddhism, we see that unless we have a bigger view, we are controlled by our limited view, our thoughts and our feelings, thinking that that is all who we are. But with our meditation, we see that that's possibly not true. And one way to change our view is to relax. Pretty straightforward. You can even just say, I say, Reverend Astor, just relax. Just relax. And it actually has an effect where I can relax and not be so caught up in my own brain. What's going on with it? Just relax. Another thing to remember is the Buddha's teaching on impermanence. And for years I thought, well, okay, you know, I can accept impermanence. You know, things are always changing and, you know, that's kind of part of life. And I can accept that I'm always changing because I certainly... I'm not the same person I was in high school, which I think is in some ways a good thing. But what I ran across is another way to interpret impermanence that I find helpful, and that is transition. Everything is in transition. That's a different way to look. Impermanence has, for me, a bit of a distance, but transition means that all of us, everything, including, you know, the bigger, the nation, the country, everybody is in a state of transition, not arriving at any set goal, because then that continues to be a transition. And there's something that is quite freeing for me with that idea of transition. I find it helpful. So I can't say that I know what's going to happen in the future, because I don't. And I'm glad that I don't pretend that I do know, because I have found in my own experience that whenever I think I know something's going to happen, it doesn't. Or sometimes part of it will happen, but it's kind of, if I were gambling on myself to come up with what's going to happen in the future, I wouldn't actually tell you the truth. I'm really bad at it. Maybe you all are better, I don't know, but I'm not so good at it. And I'm glad, because it kind of doesn't get me stuck in what I think is going to happen in the future. Let's see here. I found a quote that was sent to me in an email that I find quite helpful, which I'll read right now. Remember, you are not alone, and you do not need to finish the work. We are growing, we are becoming the people we want to be. Ha! Buddhist practice. We are becoming the people we want to be. Strength. Okay? It helps no one if you sacrifice your joy because others are suffering. We must be filled with joy so that others recognize that caring, that helping, and being generous are not a burden. They are a joy. Give the world your love, your service, your healing, but you can also give your joy. This too is a great gift. Encouraging words. This is from Desmond Tutu, who is the Archbishop Emeritus of Camp Cape Town, South Africa. I think there's a lot of words of encouragement that are out there and in here for us all in these times. Sometimes things seem really dark, fair enough. They seem so dark, like at night when there's no moon and it's cloudy. But when there is dawn's sun, one line of light, which we see, turns into the Buddha. We then know that there truly is light in the darkest place. Nothing is ever completely dark. Nothing is ever completely light. You can always find that ray of light in the darkest place. Try it out. You might find that's true. It might help you out. It might help everybody else out too. So for my ending, I'd like to tell you a poem, read a poem for you, who's by Leonard Cohen. I just heard he just recently died last night or a day or so ago. He died, and I also was reading about him. He was also a monk for part of his life. So this is the poem. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Thank you.